Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
If saving more and spending less is one of your top goals for 2023, why are you still paying insane amounts of money every month for your phone bill? Right now, when you switch to Mint Mobile, you'll get their unlimited plan for 50% off. As the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile lets you order from home and save a ton with phone plans starting at just $15 a month. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Cut your wireless bill to 15 bucks a month at mintmobile.com/save. That's mintmobile.com/save. Hurry. Offer ends January 15th.
Today, running your small or mid-sized business is challenging to say the least. There is greater pressure to offer a flexible and safe work environment. At HP, we get that. We design our products to support the needs of both the traditional office space and your employees' hybrid environment. We create IT solutions that help run your small or mid-sized business no matter where your employees are. Whether you have 5 employees or 500, HP can help. Call our U.S.-based small business advisor team today at 1-800-608-MYHP or click below.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Alex Ritson, and in the early hours of Thursday, the 19th of January, these are our main stories. Ukraine's President Zelensky appeals to world leaders gathered in Davos to upgrade their military assistance. Israel's High Court rules a key coalition partner in Benjamin Netanyahu's government with a criminal conviction cannot be a minister. Also in this podcast, a damaging day for snooker as 10 Chinese players are charged with match fixing.
We have some great etiquettes and ethos and morals and principles in snooker. We trade on that all across the world. And to find out these players were not only suspected of it, have now been charged with it, is deeply troubling.
And France's Lyon Football Club is told to pay up by FIFA after withholding wages from a pregnant star player. Over the past 2 months, the front lines in eastern Ukraine have hardened. The Russians and the Ukrainians have suffered huge losses with little gain on the battlefield. Kyiv says it needs more Western weapons to break the stalemate, especially tanks and in particular German Leopard battle tanks to give the Ukrainian military the mobility and protection to push through Russian lines. But the Germans appear hesitant to provide them, and they have a veto over any other country sending them to Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky made this plea when he addressed the World Economic Forum in the Swiss ski resort of Davos.
The supplying of Ukraine with air defense systems must outpace Russia's next missile attacks. The supplies of Western tanks must outpace another invasion of Russian tanks. The restoration of security and peace in Ukraine must outpace Russia's attacks on security and peace in other countries.
Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, said the Western military alliance is set to announce new heavier weapons for Ukraine at a summit in Germany on Friday. Around 50 countries will meet at the US-run Ramstein military base. Mr. Stoltenberg has been speaking to the BBC's Faisal Islam in Davos.
If we want a negotiated, peaceful solution in Ukraine, where Ukraine prevails as a sovereign, independent nation in Europe, then we need to provide more weapons, more military support to Ukraine. Because the only way to reach a peaceful solution is to make it absolutely clear for President Putin that he will not win on the battlefield and that he has to sit down and negotiate a solution that respects the sovereignty of Ukraine.
So we've seen the effectiveness of the support given so far, but lots more is required. Is that your message?
We need to provide more weapons and more advanced weapons, and therefore I welcome the announcements by several allies over the last days for more armor, for more battle tanks. We have seen the announcement by the United Kingdom, so the United Kingdom is actually leading by example. But also more advanced air defense systems, the Netherlands, the United States, Germany, has announced that they're ready to provide Patriot batteries, and other allies are also stepping up, including Canada. So allies are stepping up. There will be an important meeting this week in Rammstein in Germany, where I expect allies to make even more announcements on more support for Ukraine.
Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO. Only a short time into his government, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is already encountering problems within his coalition. The country's Supreme Court has ruled that one of his key partners cannot serve as a minister due to a recent criminal conviction. Tom Bateman in Jerusalem told us more about him.
Well, his name is Aryeh Deri. He is the chairman or the head of the Shaz party, or part of Benjamin Netanyahu's right-wing and religious coalition. This is a party that represents ultra-Orthodox Jews. It had won 11 seats at the election last year, making it the third biggest party in Benjamin Netanyahu's coalition. So a significant party, a significant part of the new government, this new right-wing religious party that contains members of the far right. Now, the issue with him is he has multiple convictions for corruption, the latest of which happened last year, and this was over the filing of tax returns that the courts found serious problems with. Now, he accepted a plea deal last year, paid a $50,000 fine, but also agreed that he would no longer serve in public office. That was a key part of the agreement. However, later that year, the election took place, and Benjamin Netanyahu then said he would be appointed as Minister for Health, and then later in his term as Minister for Finance. So there was a petition by opposition activists to Israel's Supreme Court. That court ruling is what we've had in the last few hours. 10 of the 11 justices saying that Aryeh Deri should not sit in government, should not have a ministerial position. They've effectively annulled Benjamin Netanyahu's decision. So first of all, it raises questions about the formation of the current coalition, which is already very controversial to some Israelis and to the international community. But also it aggravates what was a very serious constitutional clash between the Israeli government and the courts, because the government has come up with a series of proposals for effectively sort of watering down the independence of the legal system.
Tom Bateman in Jerusalem. 10 Chinese snooker players suspended as part of an ongoing match-fixing investigation have all been charged by the sports world governing body. The allegations range from fixing matches, approaching players to cheat, and betting on snooker, accusations the players have not commented publicly on. Former world champion Sean Murphy believes the allegations damage the sport.
My overriding feeling is, and I feel, complete betrayal. As a sport, you know, we have some great etiquettes and ethos and morals and principles in snooker. We're a gentleman's sport. We trade on that all across the world. And to find out these players were not only suspected of it, have now been charged with it, is deeply troubling.
Our sports news correspondent Alex Capstick has more details.
Well, this all started in October last year when a player called Liang Wenbo, who's ranked 56 in the world, he was suspended by the World Professional Billiards and Snooker Association. That's the game's governing body. 9 others followed. So they were all suspended as well, all of them from China. The governing body says after their investigation, they now have enough evidence to charge them. And these are high-profile players. Yang Bingtou, ranked 16 in the world. He was the 2021 Masters champion. He's accused of fixing matches and betting on snooker. The world number 9, Xiao Xingtang, he won the UK Championship in 2021. He's been charged with being concerned in fixing matches, is how it's been worded by the governing body, and charged also with betting on snooker. So these are really serious charges from high-profile, important players. An independent panel will consider all of the evidence and will come to some sort of ruling, but it is a serious, serious case for the sport.
What would happen if they were found guilty?
That's a good question. I mean, if they are found guilty, you heard there from Sean Murphy, who wants them to be removed from the sport altogether forever. I'm not sure that's going to happen. The chairman of the governing body, Jason Ferguson, he has said in the past when talking about this, when the players were under suspension and they were gathering the evidence, he was asked whether life bans would be appropriate, and he said that if people were found guilty, bans would probably be put in place. But he didn't go as far as to say they would be life bans, even though that is in the statute. So it could happen. Whether it does or not, well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see what this independent panel comes up with.
These are very serious allegations, though, and money is involved. Could there even be criminal proceedings as a result of this?
It doesn't look that way in this country, in the UK, where the governing body is based, but Jason Ferguson said that if anyone is found guilty, a lot of these players are based in Europe, many of them here in the UK, if they are found guilty, they could be sent back to China where they could face criminal prosecution. He says that they've been working closely with the Chinese on that. China is a big market for snooker. They've got around about, it's estimated, 50 million players in China. It's a growing sport. It's very popular, especially on television. These players are huge stars. They're celebrities in China. So this is, he says, it's being taken very seriously by the people in China. And if they are found guilty, they will have to go back to that country. And I should also say, as well as snooker being a very popular sport in China, China is very important for the game because they see this as the future of the sport. They've held major tournaments in the past, nothing during or since COVID, but they're planning on staging big tournaments there in the future.
Alex Capstick. Microsoft is cutting 10,000 jobs, about 5% of its workforce. It follows major layoffs announced recently by Amazon and Meta. Our North America correspondent Michelle Fleury has more on what this reveals about the state of the tech sector.
It's very fascinating listening to the comments that Satya Nadella, Microsoft's chief executive, has made. Let me read you this. He said, "These are the kinds of hard choices we have made throughout our 47-year history to remain a consequential company in this industry that is unforgiving to anyone who doesn't adapt to platform shifts." And I think that's the key word there, that it's an unforgiving industry to those that don't change fast enough. He also, in recent weeks, has warned of a tough couple of years ahead. So I think it's a message we've seen, as you mentioned, coming out of Meta, coming out of Amazon, coming out of Salesforce, that have all done big staff reductions. They see, after kind of the boom times, tougher times ahead. Because you have to remember that at the start of the pandemic, these were the companies that fared best. When the economy locked down, they did very well. Their profits were record-breaking. That was certainly true at Amazon. That was certainly true at some of the other big tech giants. Now, as the economy has reopened, they're seeing sort of a downturn. They perhaps got ahead of themselves. Changes in the workplace they thought would be longer-lasting, not turning out to be the case. And so they're retrenching. And that really is what Microsoft's announcement today underscores.
Michelle Fleury in New York. Now, to more evidence, if evidence were needed, of just how intelligent primates can be. That's the sound of vervet monkeys who've become the first wild primates to learn how to use a touchscreen. The technology's been tried out on monkeys in captivity before, but not on a group living in the bush, in this case the Mawana Game Reserve in South Africa. My colleague James Menendez asked Dr. Rachel Harrison from the University of Lausanne in Switzerland and co-author of the new research what the monkeys did.
So the monkeys were given a touchscreen to interact with. In their first training task, they had to touch only the blue square. And then in a second, slightly more complex one, the blue square would move around the screen in between trials.
And for doing that, they got what? Food?
Yeah, they got a few pieces of corn, which is one of their favourite foods to receive.
And what is the significance of the fact that wild monkeys can do this and not just ones in captivity? Is it that wild monkeys might not have time, as it were, might be distracted by other things? Is that it?
Previous research has shown that captive monkeys often perform better than wild ones in various cognitive tests. And one of the theories behind that is that wild monkeys simply don't have the time to devote to this kind of cognitive research. What we found, though, was that performance was the same in the wild and in captivity.
And different members of the group responded slightly differently, is that right?
We found that juvenile males and adult females came to participate more frequently than the rest of the group. We think that might be because juvenile males, when they become adults, will have to leave their home group and go and find a new group to live with. So they're in a particularly explorative phase of their life. And then adult females can often be dominant to males in the group. And so the adult females that came and participated were maybe just better able to compete for access to this touchscreen, which gave them a food reward.
And so where next? What's the next step with the research?
Well, the really exciting thing about showing that we can use touchscreens in the wild is that it's a kind of limitless technology. There's a whole range of things that you could present on a touchscreen in terms of cognitive tests. One possibility, maybe somewhat for the distant future, is to do some kind of virtual reality testing. So presenting a virtual environment on the screen that the monkeys can then navigate their way around.
Thinking about monkeys watching different videos, am I right in thinking that I guess this is the ones in captivity, they watch things that perhaps will scare them and other things that are more friendly. How do they respond to that?
So there have been some studies essentially looking at monkey TV, so giving them a choice between watching affiliative interactions, friendly interactions on video, or aggressive interactions. I have a feeling that they found they maybe prefer to watch some aggressive interactions, perhaps because they can learn some social cues from that. And that's another thing we could attempt in the future, is giving them a choice of different videos that they could watch. And we can see really what information are they interested in viewing on the screen.
Dr. Rachel Harrison. Still to come on the Global News podcast, the US Justice Department has accused the China-based cryptocurrency exchange Bislato of laundering money for criminals and has arrested its Russian founder. And a joke, what do you call a robot that smells? The answer later. Protesters from across Peru are continuing to gather in the capital, Lima, ahead of what's expected to be a big rally on Thursday, calling for President Dina Boluarte to step down. Buses and trucks carrying demonstrators have been arriving from southern Andean provinces for what activists have called the taking of Lima. Violence erupted last month following the ousting and arrest of the then-president Pedro Castillo. At least 40 people have been killed and hundreds injured in protests, and a state of emergency has now been extended. President Boluarte made this plea to the protesters.
Sabemos que quieren tomar Lima por todo lo que está saliendo en las redes.
I will wait for them in Government House, she says, adding that she extended her heart to those who'd taken to the streets and that too much blood had already been spilled. She also said the time had come for calm and discussions. The BBC's Mimi Swaby spoke earlier to Aldahir Mejia Lopez, a photographer in Lima, who was one of those arrested by police.
The protests in Peru are really complicated. There are thousands of protesters, and that's no exaggeration, all showing their anger. They're asking mainly for three things: the resignation of Dina Boluarte, a new written constitution, and a national election to be held in 2023. In regards to the confrontations between the protesters and police, the police are being extremely violent. They're firing bullets. Already more than 40 people have been killed, and all by the police. In one day alone, 17 protesters were killed.
I understand you were detained. What happened? Can you talk us through your experience?
While taking photos for a report, I was hit by a projectile on my right leg, which caused a fracture. In the middle of the demonstration, protesters ran to me and tried to help me. The protests were happening that morning at the Juliaca Puno airport. One police officer started running towards me, shouting. He held me and bent my arm with such force that he was trying to break it. I was identifying myself, shouting, "I'm press, I'm a journalist." But they didn't care. They were trying to rip the camera out of my hands. After this, I was detained as a protester. Another police officer approached me and said I couldn't take photos. I had to delete the photos I had taken, but then was finally able to walk away calmly. As I was leaving, I heard the police officer shout, "Get out of here, or I'll shoot you in the head and kill you." The police are assaulting journalists more and more.
What do you think will happen in the coming days? These protests aren't losing any momentum. If anything, they're gaining momentum. Like you said, thousands and thousands of participants are taking to the streets.
A really big group of protesters have just arrived from Lima, from the south, and they're coming to fight. I think this situation is going to get completely out of control. The people are asking for President Dina Boluarte to resign, but she has said she won't. And so the protesters won't give up. They're going to take over Lima. I'm praying to God that no one else dies, but I'm not hopeful.
That is Aldair Mejia Lopez, a photographer in Lima. The US Justice Department says it has led an international effort to disrupt a China-based cryptocurrency exchange, Bitslato. Its Russian founder, Anatoly Legkodymov, has been arrested in Miami. The US Deputy Attorney General, Lisa Monaco, said Bitslato had facilitated the transfer of hundreds of millions of dollars in illicit funds.
Bitslato was a crucial financial resource for the notorious Hydra darknet market. Now, Hydra was the world's longest-running and largest darknet marketplace, responsible for 80% of the world's darknet transactions.
U.S. Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco. Lyon, one of the world's best women's football teams, has been ordered by FIFA to pay a former player around $90,000 in unpaid wages after her salary was stopped during the pregnancy of her son. Sara Bjork Gunnarsdottir believes her victory in a tribunal is a wake-up call for the sport. Nigel Adderley is following the story.
Well, Sara Bjork Gunnarsdottir is one of the most decorated players in European football. She became pregnant in 2021, and FIFA's maternity pay policy was agreed around the same time. So players will get a full salary during pregnancy and 14 weeks' pay at two-thirds of their wage once the baby was born. But when Gunnarsdottir went back to Iceland, her home country, during the latter stages of her pregnancy, her wages stopped. And she claimed when Lyon were told she would take the case to a FIFA tribunal, they made it clear she would have no future at the club if she did. But the players' union FIFPro have backed Gunnarsdottir and she won the tribunal, so Lyon must pay the money she is owed. Now, the case was heard last May, but it's only been made public this week. And Gunnarsdottir has since moved on to Juventus in Italy.
Feels like a significant moment.
It is. FIFPro have described this as a landmark case which proves to the clubs that maternity rules can't be ignored and they will be enforced. And Gunnarsdottir herself has done a long interview with the Players' Tribune website and she said, "This is not just a business. This is about my rights as a worker, as a woman and a human being. And the victory has felt bigger than me." And maternity pay in women's football is not a new issue. Way back in 1999, the very famous US women's team had to go on strike to get any sort of maternity policy. But even 10 years after that, one of those players, Kate Markgraf, who was a huge name in the US, had her contract stopped and not renewed when she had twins. And she had to basically fight the US Federation and prove to them that she was fit to play. And even this month, a player for Reading in the Women's Super League in England, Emma Mukandi, has claimed their current policy of 14 weeks' pay after birth is not long enough.
Embarrassing for Lyon as one of the great women's clubs. Has there been any reaction from them?
Well, they've said they supported Gunnarsdottir and they worked within the framework of French law, which they say is too restrictive, and they say they will campaign for changes to it. And they also said that Gunnarsdottir left the club for only sporting reasons. But FIFA have told them if they don't pay up, they'll face a transfer ban.
Nigel Adderley. The Egyptian pound hit its lowest value ever against the US dollar this week as inflation rates surge in the Arab world's most populous nation. Egypt is facing a serious economic meltdown, which is putting the livelihoods of more than 100 million people at risk. A few weeks ago, the IMF approved a new $3 billion loan for Egypt, the fourth since 2016. Critics accuse the president, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, of mismanaging the economy, as Sally Nabil reports from Cairo.
If you ask any average Egyptian what his or her main concern is, the answer will definitely be the economy, the high cost of living. Many Egyptian families today are struggling hard to cover their basic needs. In recent months, the prices of almost everything have skyrocketed. To go grocery shopping now has become a burden for many people here. Official inflation rates have gone over 20%, but the actual figures are believed to be much higher than that.
Hanan is a street vendor who sells fish. The middle-aged woman is a mother of seven.
Three of my children go to school, and the rest are adults. I can hardly feed them.
I cannot get my little daughter a new dress. A customer who used to buy like 5 kilos now barely buys one. All of us are stressed and everyone is complaining. Even the rich are suffering. So what about us, the poor? Should we be left to die?
As we were talking to her, many shoppers passed by to check the prices of fish. They left without buying anything.
No jobs. Crazy prices. We are dead. We have been crushed.
I can't afford to buy meat anymore. I buy chicken once or twice a month. We want the president to have mercy on us.
But President Sisi has made it clear he is not to be blamed for the current downfall. He spoke this week.
It's getting difficult for all countries around the world. We didn't create this crisis. We didn't wage the Russian war, nor did we spread the coronavirus pandemic. We are just paying the price, like any other country. Let me tell you, you have to stop prattling.
Stop prattling. He cracked as a joke in his speech, attended by government officials. They received it well, but on social media, people were infuriated and described it as a sarcastic call for silence. They accused the military-backed president of putting the economy on the brink of collapse. Since Mr. Sisi took power in 2014, oil-rich kingdoms in the Gulf area helped keep the economy afloat. But in the years that followed, billions of dollars were spent on building a new capital, buying sophisticated weapons, and expanding the Suez Canal. These projects, widely criticized as unnecessary, brought into question the priorities of public spending.
Sally Nabil in Cairo. Now, what do you call a robot that smells? The answer to the schoolyard joke, C3BO. But while you're laughing, I'll tell you now, scientists in Israel have created a robot that can detect smells, and that could ultimately mean redundancy for the world's sniffer dogs. Mark Duff reports.
The princess's visit to see the customs officers at work in a Heathrow cargo shed was supposed to be a serious business. Then the princess met Oscar, a 2.5-year-old Springer Spaniel. He can sniff out drugs better than any human.
When the late Diana, Princess of Wales, watched Oscar put through his paces hunting drugs at London's busiest airport, it wouldn't have crossed anyone's mind that his successors could soon be out of a job.
The princess hardly had time to hear the rules of the game before Oscar was hot on the trail.
Almost 40 years later, the sniffer dog isn't quite history, but the handlers might be getting worried. That's because researchers at Tel Aviv University have created a robot that can distinguish a handful of smells with 10,000 times more sensitivity than the best specialised electronic devices. The team connected the antenna of a desert locust to an electronic system which uses an algorithm to interpret the signals produced by the insect. What the scientists call their biohybrid platform, a cyborg to you and me, could reliably differentiate between 8 pure odours, including geranium, lemon, marzipan, and even a variety of Scotch whiskies. The past few years have seen astounding technological advances in the field of sight and sound, like the cameras and microphones on our mobile phones. If the Israeli researchers have their way, the long-lagging sense of smell could soon be about to catch up. And if they're right, Oscar the sniffer dog's descendants really could find themselves out of a job.
Mark Duff. And that's all from us for now, but there'll be a new edition of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. You can also find us on Twitter at Global News Pod. This edition was mixed by Caroline Driscoll, and the producer was Beth Timmins. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Alex Ritson. Until next time, goodbye.
T
Today, running your small or mid-sized business is challenging to say the least. There is greater pressure to offer a flexible and safe work environment. At HP, we get that. We design our products to support the needs of both the traditional office space and your employees' hybrid environment. We create IT solutions that help run your small or mid-sized business no matter where your employees are. Whether you have 5 employees or 500, HP can help. Call our U.S.-based small business advisor team today at 1-800-608-MYHP or click below.
This week on the podcast Spark and Fire, Broadway composer Stephen Schwartz.
Here is this iconic villainess, the Wicked Witch of the West.
Stephen tells the story of creating Wicked.
I just thought that is the best idea I have ever heard for a musical.
On Spark and Fire, creators share their stories to fuel your creativity. Spark and Fire is a Wait What original in partnership with the BBC. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts.